that there are certain things that you can't control. So what should that motivate you to do in life? What is the meaning of life?
To take control.
To take control of everything that you can. How do you do that, says Mr. Chacham? How do you take control? You acquire knowledge. Now, that knowledge is no longer merely philosophical knowledge, the knowledge of humanities, but rather, Hannah, for all the pharmacologists out there, Hannah, what we saw is that it's a very practical knowledge. Learn everything you can about everything, because you'll be able to control the aspects of life more. You'll be able to control your health. You'll be able to control your survival. You'll be able to control your financial status. Do you remember this? Tovat chachma im nachala. You'll be able to live a more controlled life. Now what else do you have to learn a little bit of? A little bit of corruption. Do you remember this? You have to pick up a little bit of seduction. And you even have to, like, sometimes know when to act foolish, because that's what it means to know everything. Now, what does he believe about morality? Should you also learn and study and even acquire and implement morality in your lifestyle?
Yeah, I'm not.
Yes, why?
You need a little bit of anger.
Okay, and morality, he sees that, does society work better with morality?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but why shouldn't you go? If morality is already something positive, so why shouldn't I adopt the extreme and be a tzaddik? Remember, because you can't. Meaning no one's a real tzaddik. Ain't tzaddik b'arz yisrael lo yechata. Do you remember this? And we all speak lashon hara about each other, so let's admit that we're not tzaddikim. Is that okay? No. I'm not saying that I speak lashon hara. I'm saying what he says. Is that okay? And therefore, he says you should adopt morality, even more than adopt corruption, but not to an extreme, because the extreme is an impossible goal. So this was basically how we ended his philosophy in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Bet. Came along the next speaker. Who recalls? Who's the next speaker? Levi Elokim. And he says, I tried this out. I Lord Chachma now, especially if it's Kohelet, it makes a lot of sense that he tried it out. Why?
He's the smartest.
Because he was the Chacham. That's why he says, believe me, I tried this. I really did think that the more you learn, the more you control, and that's exactly what life is all about. But what problem did I see? Do you remember we saw our mashal of the woman?
Yeah.
Yes? And the seductive woman. So we saw that Shlomo uses woman in his writings to mean the epitome of negative seduction. He also uses her, though, to mean the epitome of a positive seduction, right? Such as the Eshet Chayil. Here, obviously, in this context, he's referring again to the negative seduction, meaning woman symbolizes the negative aspects of Chachma. And therefore he says, okay, the problem with Chachma is what? You said that you can adopt a little bit of everything and thereby be in control, including morality. But what do I see? The more one studies, the more one tries to become in control, what ends up happening? Okay, what does he say? Worse than frustration, meaning frustrated because I'll never be able to acquire all that knowledge. But worse than frustration, worse than death, which is beyond my control, I notice woman, that she is full of these entrapments, meaning the woman is the negative aspects of Chachma. The Chacham maintain that if you're a Chacham, you can adopt morality in your life and you can be in control. Comes along the Rebbe Elokim and says, I tried it, but I see that the more one gets involved in trying to control, what naturally happens? His morality will be seduced. It will be corrupted. Do you see this? I'm going to give you an example. And I also teach in university. And people always ask me, they said, my peers in university, just last night I was having a discussion with a professor, and he said, the good news is that I knew that he knew the answer. He said, Shani, why don't you just give up teaching in the Midrashot and just become a full-time professor? So I'm going to tell you why. So what I phrased it as, I can never leave the world of Midrashot. Why not? Because I enjoy it too much. What's so special about the world of Midrashot? Because it's not just about academic learning. What else is it about? It's about religious development. It's about inspiring spiritually. Right? Isn't that special to be a part of that? It's about, again, speaking to you, learning together with you, and not just standing up in front of a classroom and lecturing. Right? I actually explained it as follows. I said, because I don't want to teach, I want to educate. It sounds better in Hebrew. Ani lo rak rotza lelamed, ani rotza lechanech. What's the difference? And because I can pass on information. The truth is that what could I do? And I can stand here. I can even video myself and I just put it on the board. Right, and like in university classes, you know, sometimes that's what the professor does. He can't make it, so he'll just video himself. Do you know this? Mm-hmm. And that's what you do. You just watch a video of his lecture, or better yet, you don't even come to the lecture. You just send in your digital recorder, right? Or you just read it online. That's right, or download it, and whatever the case is. But that would never work in a midrasha. Why not? Because it's not about just teaching you information. What is it about? The dynamic, the discussion, the religious messages that you have to internalize and question. Do you see that? So how am I getting to this, right? Because there's another reason, I'll be honest, between us, that, again, what goes on in the world of in academia, anyone have parents who are professors or are in the world of university? Mm-hmm. Yes, very nice. What happens? And of people who whose lives are all about knowledge, so how do they measure themselves?
How do you measure how smart a person is? Letters after your name. How many papers? Excellent. It's about how many articles, how many books you publish. Again, it's also about, along, but it's basically, again, tenure, professorship, all of this is based on how many articles you publish a year.
Isn't that something? So you can imagine what exists in the world of university. There's a tremendous amount of competition. So what are all these smart people doing to each other? They're smiling at each other in the hallway, but really? And now they're stabbing them in the back. Again, how many students are in your class? How many classes are you teaching this year? Sometimes it's good, by the way, if you're only teaching two classes and I'm teaching four classes, what do I know? That you have more time to write articles. Right? Do you see this? And right? I better take off spring semester. I'm serious. Meaning this is really what goes on. There's a tremendous amount of jealousy. There are the people in university necessarily, again, they're obviously always exceptions to the rule. Are these the people that you look up at as the most religious personae? Are these like the Gedolei Hador? Why not? Because they're not focusing on and the religious aspect. So that's exactly what the moral Yirei Elokim wants to say. He says, you can't be both. You can't be a chacham who believes that he can control everything through adapting all different types of knowledge, including morality, because what will eventually happen to your morality? It's going to become corrupt. And therefore, he then points out in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Chav Zayin, Re'eza Matzatei Makalel Achad L'Achad L'Msol Cheshbon. Every type of study, in the end, if it's all about gaining control, then it's going to ruin your morality. It's all about calculations. Asher Obik Shanafshi V'lo Matzati Adam Achad Mi'Elef Matzati V'Isha B'Choleila Lo Matzati. He says, maybe one man in a thousand have, but I've never found, again, a woman amongst anyone, meaning a non-corrupt woman. He's saying, excuse me, I haven't found knowledge that doesn't seduce you, that doesn't corrupt you. So ultimately, what is the Yirei Elokim's argument against the Chacham? Mr. Chacham, you believe that you can control everything, including your morality, but even subconsciously, the more you end up controlling, what ends up happening to your morality?
The more it controls you.
The more it controls you, or the more corrupt it becomes. So you can't be a Chacham and adapt to Yirei Elokim at the same time. So what do you think the Yirei Elokim is going to say? If you really do think that there's something intrinsically good about Yirat Elokim, then what should you do? You should live your life and devote your life to being a Yirei Elokim. How does that sound? Now what else, though, does the Yirei Elokim have to answer? He also has to answer the problem of Perek Vav, which is, what is it that I learn about death that teaches me the message of life? So the Chacham said, death teaches that I don't have control, which is a proof that what is life about? Controlling through knowledge. So the Yirei Elokim, who now says, look, you can't be a Chacham and a Yirei Elokim, but can I be a Yirei Elokim and incorporate some Chachma? Yeah. So he's going to have to explain how that works, not just in the face of death or despite death, but how we actually learn that from death. Everyone ready? Here we go. Perek Chet Pasuk Aleph. Mi kachacham umi odea pesher davar. Who is like the Chacham? Who knows solutions to things? Chachmat Adam ta'ir panav. The wisdom of man enlightens his face. Va'oz panav. And his countenance yishuneh. It has great effects. So this seems to be, who's saying this? Who is like the Chacham? The Chacham has a great countenance. The Chacham has a great personality. The Chacham's face is illuminated. Who seems to be saying it?
The Chacham.
So one possibility is that after the Re'elukim downplays the Chacham interjects and says, still, come on, Mr. Re'elukim, who's like the Chacham? The Chacham is the best. And how does the Re'elukim answer? Look at the next pasuk. Who's like the Chacham? Ani. Be quiet, Mr. Chacham. I'm also a pretty good guy. Ani Pimelach Shmor, because I observe the voice of the king. So either you have to understand Pasuk Aleph as an interjection of the Chacham after the Yirei Elokim's rebuttal, or how else can I understand it? There's no interjection of the Chacham, which, in which case, if the Chacham isn't saying, wow, who's like the awesome Chacham, who could be saying it?
Yirei
Elokim is being a little sarcastic. Excellent. And saying, beautiful, Aviva. He's saying, so who's like the Chacham? Who's like the Chacham whose face is illuminated? Who's like the Chacham with his great countenance and his great effects on people? And what does he say right after? Ani. Don't worry. Better than being a Chacham and a corrupt Yirei Elokim, you may as well be a great Yirei Elokim and adopt the value of Chachma. He says, who's like the Chacham who's so great? I am, but I'm even better. Everyone ready for his speech? Ani pi melech shmor. Why am I so great? Because I observe, I follow the edicts of the king. Who's the king? Thank you. V'al divrat shvuat Elokim. And I follow through on the words of the oaths to God. Now, based on Perek Dalet and Perek Hey, when we were first introduced to the Yirei Elokim, you already know what is the realm of life in which the Yirei Elokim is most afraid of God, and that he tells us you have to be most careful with regard to your speech. Remember, that's how we started our Lashon Hara campaign. Speaking of which, how's everyone doing with their 3 hours a day? Other than Evie, how's everyone doing with their 3 hours a day? Yes?
Put a reminder on my phone.
You put a reminder on your phone. Excellent. Kol hakavod. Everyone else being extra conscious and cautious? Mm-hmm. Excellent. Now, by the way, for those who really are being cautious those 3 hours, what's weird? Like, what happens during those 3 hours, Leona?
You end up not having an opportunity.
What do you mean by being extra cautious? You think a little more before you talk, or do you find yourself talking less?
Like, just speaking to people in general?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's like, during dinner, I don't smile.
Oh, so that's actually, no, so you generally talk to people, or you eat during that time? You talk, right? Because you're at table, so do you find that you talk less because you're afraid of speaking Lashon Hara during that time?
Sometimes. Can I tell you something funny that happened?
Sure.
I was visiting friends in their seminary, and they started telling me, like, they were just about to start telling me about this drama that was going on, and literally just as they were about to start, I get a notification from my phone, starts buzzing, and it says, Shani Targan Lashon Hara Hour.
That is so cool. And you just, wait, you got up and walked away. Oh, you told them.
I'm going back to school. We'll talk about this later.
Call Hakavod.
No, but it was just very funny. Like, right, it was just weird.
Yeshua Hashem can horrify you.
It was
amazing. Yes, them. So, notice then. And by the way, the Re'elukim would say that was obviously like God, you know, rewarding you for, or God getting involved. No question. God comes along the Re'elukim, and we already know that the area in which he most expresses his fear of God is with regard to limiting speech. Remember, don't talk too much because you're going to mess up with your spirit, because people say crazy things. Again, when they start to talk, do you remember this? Start telling people your dreams. Again, turns into babbling and babbling, and you're going to start saying, yes, I commit myself to God. He says, beware, don't do that unless you know you can follow through. You know what? Come to the kibbutz, don't even take a chance. So here we see this expressed as well. He says, what is my mantra in life? I obey the king and I follow through on my commitments to God. What else is he implying? And if I don't follow through, then I just don't even offer them. The al divrat shvuat Elokim. Al tibahel. And don't be so scared of God. What would I be scared of? Punishment, thank you. Mi panav telech. Instead, just like run away from or walk away from his face. What does that mean? Excellent. Meaning, don't bring too much attention to yourself. How are you going to bring attention to yourself? By angering God. How are you going to anger God? By talking too much. So just like, don't bring too much attention to yourself. Al tamol b'davara, and don't remain consistent in doing something bad. I mean, if you recognize that you did something wrong, don't deny it, but don't keep doing it. Right? Just get away from it. Because whatever it is that God wants to do, he can do. Can anyone tell me what's the proof of the Yireh Elokim? Why is he saying this now? Whatever God wants to do, he can do. God is in control. How do I know that there are certain things clearly that are beyond my control? What's the proof of things being beyond my control?
Death.
Excellent. Yeah. So basically, what does the Yireh Elokim say that I learned from death? I learned from death just what the Chacham learned, which is there are certain phenomena that are entirely beyond my control. Let's review one last time. What does the Chacham extrapolate from that? If death is all about what's beyond my control, then life must be about taking control. The Yireh Elokim is going to come to an altogether different conclusion. He agrees. Death teaches me that it's beyond my control. What do I learn from that? That even in life, there is someone who controls beyond me. Everyone see that? That death shows me that there is a power beyond my control. Do I determine when I die? No. Even according to the Chacham, who determines when I die?
God.
Now again, the Chacham doesn't believe that there's an ongoing theistic God. He believes in a deistic God, but God doesn't allow me to control death. So says the Chacham, I'll control life as much as I can, and whatever I can't, I'll understand, okay, I'll be calm about it, because God controlled that too. The Yireh Elokim says, indeed, death teaches me that God controls death. And that's supposed to also teach me that God controls? Thank you. So what do I want to do with my life? Now that I know that death taught me that it's beyond my control,
just do what God says.
Do what God says. If I do what God says, then what type of life will I have? Then I'll have a good life wherein God will not allow me to control, but God will control my life so that it will be good. Excellent.
Then Tzadik Varlo doesn't make sense.
Ah, thank you. Hadassah already says, wait, how do I understand Tzadik Varlo? Don't know yet. But that's going to be an excellent rebuttal. Excellent. So let's take a look here. Ani pimel shmur bat bat shvat olkem al tivah hel mipanat achal tamo b'davara ki kol asher yachbot yased. Don't you see? This is what that teaches you. God can do whatever he wants to do. God is in control. Basher dvar melech shilton. Because the word of the king, i.e., God hears that word, shilton. What does shilton mean?
Ruler.
Rulership, control. He's in control. Umi amar lo matase. Does anyone tell him what to do? Who tells him what to do? Meaning, don't you see that the buck stops at HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And therefore, why even in life would you want to do anything against this will / control of God? By the way, again, back to the Matrix just for a moment. And anyone in the Matrix recognizes that. There really is, by the way, a Rebbe from Eshet Torah. He's from Eshet Torah. Yeah, from Eshet Torah. Who goes around, he calls himself the movie rabbi. And which movie does he say you can learn the most messages about a relationship between God and man? Yes, he gives, like, I heard, like 5 to 7 hour seminars on the Matrix. I've never heard it myself, but Anna. People, I just keep thinking it takes shorter just to watch The Matrix and read Kohelet then. Okay, but in any case, back to this idea of, and once you're ready in The Matrix, then, I know, what is to say? You can't tell The Matrix what to do, so you realize, what's the whole point? The point of The Matrix is just to live, recognizing that the Matrix controls, and that's okay. Right, do you see that? Now, at the same time, what does that make you feel? That we're a little robotic. But that's okay. Does it make sense so far? By the way, are there some people who do? Why isn't that robotic, Ava?
Because you think my actions affect the way God's going to choose my
Very nice. Team. Meaning it's not pre-programmed, yeah. Right? But yafemao. So I'm not completely robotic. I have bechira chafshut here. Right? Do you see that? Mitsuyan. Excellent. Does everyone see that? I'm going to listen to God who's in control. Do I have free choice not to listen to him?
Yeah.
Yes, but I'm telling you, things will be better because he's the one who controls, so things will be better. If I listen. The Seder?
He's pretty much saying, like, we should just, like, live life without doing anything, not bringing attention to ourselves. Does that mean we shouldn't ask for things also? Like, Hashem will do what he wants to do, and you have no say, like...
Excellent. You can ask God. You can ask God if you feel that...
called attention to ourselves.
So, maybe ask God, like, within the context of praising God. Like, God, you're so great. You're so strong. So, can you heal my grandfather, please? Right, which is what we do. Isn't that interesting? But what else can I argue? If you know that you don't listen to God, according to him, would you ever have the audacity to ask God for things? No, meaning maybe if you really do listen to God, maybe you'll feel more confident asking God for things. Okay.
does like Ray Elohim, if he's like religious or whatever, does like he's like the religious person, does he believe in like an afterlife?
As of now, do any of them believe in an afterlife?
No.
No, why not?
Because he's only talking about in life, but wouldn't that just help solve his problems?
It would definitely help solve his problems, but it would be an awful solution. Why? I'm going to solve the problems now by telling you that there's something thereafter that none of us know about. Which means it's a very unrealistic, non-philosophically grounded position. Yeah, and that's why I meant that Kohelet really takes you step by step through a very logical process of thought. And especially if you understand that it's not an anthology, but actually the same speaker developing his ideas one step at a time. You want to say something? Okay, here we go. Pasuk Hey. Shomer mitzvah layedat avara. So this is his solution for you. What's meaningful in life? Now that you know that death teaches you that God is in control, not only in death, but in life. That's okay. So what should you do in your life? Do mitzvot. Observe the mitzvot, and then you'll never know any bad thing because you obeyed God. Ve'et u'mishpat. Remember, whose word is eight? There are predetermined times. That's a Nehentan word. But what word is a very Yirei Elokim word? Mishpat. You remember, how did the Yirei Elokim understand the system of justice? Does God always end up rewarding or punishing? Yes. Do you know exactly when?
No.
So he says, "Ve'etu mishpat yedal leiv chacham." He says, any smart person who's also a Yirei Elokim will know that, will there be a time for justice? It may not be right away. And if you're Mechal Shabbos, Hashem isn't necessarily going to strike you with a bolt of lightning. But just know that, are there going to be consequences for your actions? Yes, how do I know that? Death is the greatest example. Why is that the great example of there being consequences? Because it shows that who's ultimately in control. Excellent. Ki l'kol chefetz yesh eight. That's like such a Nehentan statement. L'kol zman ve'et l'kol chefetz. But he adds in what important word? Because there are times. There are times for what? Mishpat. I don't know when they are. Right? Do you remember in Paratel he said, if you're good, good things will happen. If you're bad, bad things will happen. And then, what was the primary rebuttal? That doesn't work that way. So what's his new qualified answer? Eventually, do things work out? Mm-hmm. Now, it could be that there's a tzaddik viralo. Don't worry, Hadassah, what would he answer? Eventually, when he's 100 years old, what's going to happen? Thank you. So now, Aviva, does he say that in Olam Haba, things are going to be okay for the tzaddik? No, he doesn't bring in Olam Haba. He just means that, will there be a time that things will, that God will reward you or God will punish you? Yes, I don't know when that is, but there's a time for mishpat, ki ra'at ha'adam rabba alav, especially if a man is going to continue to quantity, and again, rabba, he's going to perform a lot of evil. He says, definitely, will God, who's in control, will God take control and punish the person who is going to perpetuate evil? For sure. Ki enini yodea ma shehiyeh. I just can't tell you what.
Where?
Can't tell you what he's going to do and when he's going to do it. Meaning, I can't tell you what will be. Ki kasher yem miyagid lo. Again, why not? Because he's in control. He's not just in control of the punishment. He's in control of how and when and where and why it's going to happen.
But is the Yirei Elokim's premise for following the mitzvot so that because God's in control, therefore he won't punish you, or so that you'll get things that are, so that you'll have a good life?
Primarily so that he won't punish you. But what does he include within that also? And subsequently, you'll live a good life. Meaning, according to the Yirei Elokim, life is good, right? Meaning, God gives man good things in general, right? Is life okay? Even people struggling here and there, meaning life is good. People survive in life. So what does he want to say? So what does God do to show that he's in control? He kills people, but he also punishes people throughout. So you're definitely right that things will be good, but his focus, just as you said, is also definitely right. The focus is don't do anything bad because then you'll get punished. Yafe ma'od. So pasuk zayin, ki eneni yodei ma she'yeh ki kasher yeh miyagid lo. Ein adam shalit baruach. And now he's going to prove it again. Just like man cannot control the wind, l'chlo et haruach. I always think of Pocahontas. What did she say about the winds? The colors of the winds. That what happens to the wind? Okay, what are the words of the song? It's beautiful. About the colors of the wind. Sycamore. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
all the voices of the mountains.
And you paint with all the colors of the land.
You can own the earth and still all your own.
Thank you. That's the line. Say it slowly. You can own the earth and still.
All your own is earth until you can.
Beautiful. You know, what does she do at the time? Come on, you've all seen this. You'll see when you have kids, you're going to see these movies like 25 times until you know all the words by heart. And you can own the earth and still. And then what does she do? She picks up. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
She picks up the, exactly, she picks up like earth from the ground. You can own the earth and still you will.
All you'll own is earth until.
And then she like spreads it out. All you'll own is earth until.
You can paint with all the
You can paint with all the colors of the winds. Beautiful. Come on, isn't that beautiful? Okay, what's the point? I know when you were 5 years old, you didn't appreciate the deep meaning of the song. What is the meaning of the song? What are the colors of the winds? Remember that old lady comes and tries to figure out what are the colors of the winds? The forces of
nature.
Of nature, which is, again, the Yirei Elokim would say that is
Hashem,
Yafem Ma'od. Right, meaning that lady in the tree, because Indians believe all forces in different points of nature, but they all believe the tree is God and the leaves are God. And is that okay? Okay, so basically, the colors of the winds are Hashem. And so you may think you're in control, but. You may own the earth and still, and one more time.
All you'll own.
All you'll own is the earth until you recognize God. Because do you really control the forces of nature? Mm-hmm. Isn't that beautiful? That's what she's trying to tell. What's his name? Yes. Okay, Hadassah's much better at this than I am. I'm so smart. Yes, excellent. And now the idea is, it's really a very religious song, right? That. You have to recognize that there are forces of nature beyond you. And so a frum person listening to this is saying, you have to recognize living in the world that there are forces greater than you, i.e. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yafeh Ma'od. So even when you think you own and you're planting, and that's why she's talking to, what's his name?
John Smith.
The guy, John Smith. Thank you. You're doing great, Hadassah. How many times did you see this? I know that she is on that. Remember, they're trying to build these artificial homes. Where did the Indians live? They live in the middle of nature. Says you think you own it, but you don't, right? And then she throws the earth to the wind until. Right, one of my other favorite lines is: Have you ever seen the sycamore? Have you ever?
Or
the wolf cry, right? How high is the sycamore grow? If you cut it down,
you'll never know.
Yafem Ma'od. Right, what is she trying to say? Like, that's an expression of God. Like, why are you cutting it down? You'll never see the greatness if you deny it. Right? And I tell you, it's a beautiful song. Okay, back to this. So now, again, Kohelet is basically saying, and in the name of the Yirei Elokim, he says, can man ever really own the earth? No, because what does he have to recognize? It's so clear that when you live in nature, what do you recognize? That there are forces beyond you. Can anyone give an example? Hurricane Sandy, right? You can build your home, you can make a basement, you can waterproof your basement, and what's going to happen? It's going to get flooded and destroyed. Nachon, why? Because there are forces beyond you, i.e., HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what's even a greater proof than hurricanes? Death. Thank you. Mitzuyan. Death is the ultimate proof that there's a force beyond you. So that's exactly what the Yirei Elokim says. He says, I'll prove it to you. I'll prove to you that there are forces beyond you that ultimately are going to punish you if you do something. Ein Adam Shalit Baruach. Just like man cannot control the earth here, so too he can't control the winds. You ever try, like when you were younger, to catch the winds in your hands? Or I love this, right? You throw kisses to your children, to your siblings, to your nieces and nephews. And you say, catch my kiss. I still do that. And not now. That's so funny because we all know, again, it's coming. Oh, I just missed it. Or, no, I go, thank you so much. Again, do we know that? Is there such a thing? Can you catch my kiss? No. Again, we can't control. Again, just like you can't control something so natural as wind. Right? This is a cute experiment. Can I take a box, and when it's windy, and get the wind in the box, lock the box, and then when I open the box, am I going to feel a gust of air?
No.
You don't control wind. Ein adam shalit baruch lechlo et haruach. You cannot contain the wind. Ve'ein shalton b'yam ha-mavet. And just like... He says, that's what you learn from death. Just like you do not control the day that you die, the phenomenon of death, so too you can't control any forces in this world. As a matter of fact, do you even control the consequence of war? I always think about it, in 1967, if you would have asked a political analyst, so who's going to win? Again, the Arab Legion, composed of Syria, Egypt, and ultimately, who ended up signing on that morning?
Jordan.
And or the tiny fledgling Israeli army. Who would I put my bets on? The Arab Legion under Nasser. No question whatsoever. Right, Beth? Do we determine the outcomes of wars?
No.
Absolutely not. And therefore, can we control, or basically, can we escape our own evil actions in this world? No, because you don't even control that. Who controls the consequences for your actions?
Hashem.
And Hashem. Isn't that a good proof? Death proves to me that not only in death, but also in life, there's a force, i.e. God, beyond me, and therefore, what should I do in my life? Obey that force. Submit
like
to that force. This is the Arab Kingdom. Now, the Nehentan will say, he doesn't believe it's predetermined. Anything. He believes that God controls based on my actions. Pasuk Tet. Et kol ze ra'iti. What does that already tell you? New speaker. Excellent. So can anyone tell me, we had starting the end of Perek Vav, which was death as the unbeatable foe, right? The unconquerable enemy, right? Death cancels everything. Who has tried to show that death actually can teach me what life is about? The Chacham and the Yirei Elokim. Who's left? The Nehentan. The Amal was incorporated into the philosophy of the Chacham. Right? They're both now doers and controllers, right? To control my environment. So the only one who's left is the Nehentan. What we're going to now see, and guys, you should get excited, because this is going to be the last speech of the Nehentan. If it's the last speech, then what do you know? Very nice. He's basically going to, and we're going to see, just like the Amal, the only way that you can really cancel a philosophy is if they cancel it out. Because everyone could always offer rebuttal against you, but you can come back and defend yourself. Unless I criticize myself. Do you see that? I find faults in my own philosophy. So this is going to be the speech of the Nehentan. After which, how many people are going to be left standing in this philosophical argument of existentialism?
Only two.
So after today, we're going to be down to the last two, the Chachamen. Stay tuned for next week when they battle it out. Okay, but now at the Nehentan. We're in a Kol Ze Ra'iti and Pasuk Tet. At Kol Ze Ra'iti, you're going to tell me how I can figure out, how you can figure out that it's the Nehentan who's speaking. At Kol Ze Ra'iti, you know what? I've really seen this and I've given thought to this. V'natonet libi l'chol ma'aseh asher na'asa tachat Hashemesh. So now it's asked to tell me how you know that this is the Nehentan. I've looked at everything that na'asa, that is done passively in this world.
It has nothing to do with
man. And it says nothing to do with man. I don't see ma'aseh asher usim, but na'asa, it's already been done. Eight, whose word is just eight, not eight in mishpat, just eight alone. There's a predetermined time. Nehentan. Asher shalat ha'adam ba'adam laralo. He says, I disagree with you, Mr. Yirei Elokim. Mr. Yirei Elokim says, who's in control of all the forces?
God.
So, here we go. Right, that. He says, oh, really? Now, I can probably get in trouble for this, so just imagine this virtually, okay? Let's say I come over and I hit you. That's right. Who hit you? I hit you. Very nice. So Yirei Elokim says, now, who controlled that? God. The Nehentan says, who controlled that? I did. Now, even the Nehentan, you're right, Aviva, would say, the reason I hit you was because it was predetermined that I should do. But who hit you? I did. Right, do you see that? So the Nehentan looks around and he says, I don't know, according to the Yirei Elokim, everything in this world is controlled by God, but I see a lot of things that are controlled by man. Can you give me another example? Not only hitting people, but what else is controlled by man?
Eating,
killing people. That's right. Mm-hmm. How about you? Looks like God. Do you remember? Wait, were you alive in 1995?
Yeah.
You're 1 year old. Okay, yes, I'm out. And 1995 was the year, especially because we just commemorated Yom HaKadosh HaKlali. Right, what did you guys do for us about the debate? Other than stay off. You went to Yad Vashem. On the Sarvateva, was it packed?
Yeah.
So again, this is when we, I'm actually remember all those who don't have those to remember them. And Anna. It was Anna. Nachon Yom HaShoah of 1995 was the 50th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. Right? Remember this? Yeah. And Elie Wiesel went back to Auschwitz. He had gone on the March of Living a few times, but and people watch this, the 1995 Elie Wiesel speech till today. And it's very, very powerful because you've all read Night by Elie Wiesel?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And now, do you remember he says, why did he give up on religion after the Holocaust? The same reason that many people gave up on religion. Right? He was from a very, very firm background, right? His father, his grandfather, they were all Rabbanim. He was a big Talmud Chacham in Cheder, and he was a firm Jew. And why couldn't he... Now, by the way, the only reason he still kept Yom Kippur after the Shoah. Why? Out of respect for his father, right, who died on the death march with him. Can you imagine, by the way, making it with your father and then your father dying on the last day of the death march? Okay, don't imagine it. Anyway, so he explained there why he gave up on God after the Holocaust. Why? Because he felt that God gave up on him, right? And God gave up on his family. He couldn't understand how God, who's in control, could let it happen. That's right. And in 1995, you should all, I don't know, when you have like 2-3 minutes, after Night Seder, and you should try to download this. He says for 50 years, he's been angry with God. God, why did you do this? Why did you do this? And he wrote also an editorial that came out the day after in the New York Times. He realized that God did not do it. Who killed 6 million Jews? Who killed his family? Very nice. It says the Nazis. It was man who did it to man. Now, what question, obviously, do you have? But God allowed for it. God may have not done it, but God allowed for it. He says yes, because God allows for what?
Free choice.
He allows man free choice, and he allows man to take control. He does. And therefore, by the way, I remember this. Is it anyone? That's when the Serbian government was harassing its people. It was right before Darfur. Anyone protest in any of the Darfur protests? You have any idea what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And also, as Darfur was just getting started. So then, like, the second half of the speech was all about we cannot let it happen again. In what sense, we can't let genocide in any country because who controls it?
Yeah.
Man. And that's when a remarkable change happened. He started going, he davens in Fifth Avenue. Shul. In Rabbi Lookstein. KJ, thank you. He davens in KJ. He goes every Shabbos to KJ with the kippah. And so says, does he put on tefillin every day? That I don't know. But is he a Shomer Shabbos Jew? Yes. Isn't that something? Only as of 1995. And now why is that? So, because all of a sudden he realized it's not God. Meaning we think that God controls it. Now, to a certain degree, who does he sound like? The Nantan. The Nantan says, oh, you think it's all God, but actually, does man really perpetrate a lot of evil on his own?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Don't worry, we're going to get back to God and Elie Wiesel and the Yirei Elohim. But the Nehentan himself says, I see that man controls a lot. Not only that, Asher Shalat Adam Ba'adam Laralo. And man perpetrates evil, and not just God. Meaning you're saying that if something bad happens to man, it must have been because God was in control, and he did something bad to this man. Why?
He deserved it.
Because he deserved it, because he didn't recognize the control of God. Do you see that? That's the Yirei Elohim's philosophy. Is everyone following this?
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah? Mitzuyan. So now the Nehentan says, really? And I see bad things happening to man, not because of God. Meaning, what would we say? When is it clear that God did it? I can call a hurricane God. I can call an earthquake God. I can call the person dying young God. But what can I really call God?
Genocide.
What else? It's a direct murder. Again, it's one thing if you lost your money in the stock market crash. It's another thing if someone stole your money from you. So now why are you broke? Not because God did something bad to you, but because?
Man.
Man did something bad. And how about that thief? What happens to that thief?
Nothing.
Do you see this? So the Nantan comes along and says, okay, I see a lot of evil, though, that man is in control of. Uvachain, he says, and worse, now he brings up Hadassah's point. Do you remember what he initially said? With regard to, again, the Yirei Elokim said, if you're bad, then what should happen to you? God is in control. So just beware, because God will punish you. He says, oh, really? Uvachain, now, I don't know when God will punish you, but does the Yirei Elokim believe that God will eventually punish you? Is there an eight for this mishpat? Yes. God will decide when. He says, really? Uvachain ra'iti rishaim kfurim vava'u. He says, I've seen a lot of wicked people who should be buried and dead, but they're walking around. Not only are they walking around, where are they walking from? Holy places. Every time I get to this pasuk, I think of the mafia. And you know, what do like the mafia people do like before and after a murder? Go to the church, they do their like penance thing, and like, okay, in the name of the God and the Son and whoever else. Again, and they go ahead and do their thing, and then they come back, meaning, where are the evil people found? Not only are they alive, and they seem to be doing fine, the Sopranos seem to be doing okay, but they're even hanging out in the holy places, meaning they're even getting away with this religious persona. And by the way, do you think the Nantan is happy with this phenomenon? We're going to see he's also frustrated, but this is a very strong rebuttal against the Yirei Elokim, who says that God is in control, and that's why you should devote your life to the control of God. Oh, really?
There is a time, but we don't know when it is, so maybe it's not.
And, so he's going to go even further. Don't worry. And they're even found in the same city where they committed the crime. Meaning, what's he saying? Are there plenty of wicked people who get away without punishment? Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Gamza Hevel, here it comes. I know that it's meaningless. It bothers me also, Mr. Yirei Elokim, but what can I tell you? I'm sorry, your philosophy does not work. Because I see that God isn't really in control, because man does a lot of controlling, and God isn't in control to really punish all those bad people. Asher einasa pitgam. Now he offers an amazing argument. And he says, not only that, if God really wanted everyone to understand that he's in control, what should you do every time someone does something bad? You should do what? You should punish them immediately, right? Strike them with a bolt of lightning. Right? Doesn't that make sense? And if God would strike everyone with a bolt of lightning, and even if it wasn't immediate, but if everyone knew that all the bad people would get killed, meaning they wouldn't get away with their crime, then what would happen?
No one would be bad.
Then no one would be bad.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
no, so that's what he says. Asher einasa pitgam. This is not only that, but God is giving up an opportunity of making a pitgam. You remember, what's a pitgam?
A saying,
an adage, an epithet. Right? Meaning God is giving up an opportunity to set a certain standard. If it was clear that God really does punish all the bad people for their bad actions, for not recognizing him, then people would be sufficiently deterred and feel submissive to God. So, but the fact that God doesn't kill people off, the fact that God doesn't punish, doesn't allow for God's control to be manifest and for it to be made into a pitgam, masara amihira. If God would punish the evil quickly, then it would be a pitgam. Everyone would know it, and no one would do any evil. But what can I tell you? Alkein mali leiv b'nei ha'adam b'hem lasot ra. But what does God do? He doesn't punish. Are there immediate consequences for man's actions? No, for all I know, there are no consequences for man's actions. So what does man continue to do? If I know that most people who shoplift get away with it, then do I have any deterrence against shoplifting? No. So I may as well do it, because chances are, worst comes to worst, by the way, what will happen if I shoplift? I'll get caught, and then?
I have to give it back,
and then?
Pay a fine,
and then?
Maybe go to jail.
But chances are, not even juvenile jail anymore. Chances are, though, what will happen?
Nothing.
See this? Moral of the story, thank you. Moral of the story, it pays to shoplift. Thank you. That was exactly the point. That's what the Nehentan is trying to say. He says, wait a second, you're telling me that God's control is so clear in this world, we see from death that God is in control, and that's why we should all submit to the control. Firstly, I don't see God so much in control. I see man doing a lot of controlling. Secondly, I don't really see that God punishes people who don't submit to his control. I would like it if that was the case, because then maybe there would be a little less evil in this world, but it's not the case, Mr. Yirei Elokim. Asher chote osera ma'at umarichlo. What does that mean? He's playing off on the word ma'at. What's ma'at? Mem aleph taf. Not mem ayin tet. Mem ayin tet means labriot. Mem ayin tet means he does a little. Here he says, in the meantime, you have a sinner who does ra ma'at. What's ma'at?
100.
He does 100 evils. Umarichlo. And what happens?
Long life.
He lives a long life. Rasha ve Ketova. Ki gam yodea ani asher yetov lo yirei elokim asher yom lufanav. The man Tam is telling the elokim, I also think that it would be much better if good things happen to the yirei elokim. Why? I would love if all the yirei elokim in the world had a good life. Because what would that promote? More people to be good. But is that the way it works? No. As a matter of fact, I don't get it. Like, I don't even get why God allows for bad people to get away with their bad thoughts. If God is really in control, then he shouldn't do that. Isn't that a great philosophical argument against God's control? If he's really in control, then let him show his control against those that don't recognize the colors of the wind. V'tov lo yeh l'rasha. I think it would be much better if no good befell wicked people. V'lo ya'arich yamim. And he should not live a long life. Katzel asher inenu yarim. L'fnei elokim. He should be like the shadow. All those who don't fear God.
Argument that like the reason why it's clear that it's not the Yirei Elokim is because if God was in control, then God would do that, like he would reward, like he would do, right? But, like, how does he know that that's what God wants? Like, if God's in control, he has no idea what God, maybe God has like a plan that he wants to do good things, but like that.
But then, does that really make any sense? Meaning, why would God, who says, yes, I figure it out, meaning, in the meantime, I could just as easily say that there's no control of God, because I see man doing a lot of controlling, number one, and number two, do I see a lot of plenty of wicked people who are doing fine without getting punished by God, even to the day that they die? Yes, which tells me that that doesn't make sense if God really... Yeah, but then it doesn't make sense that God is in control. Because if God was really in control, he shouldn't want to tolerate it.
But no, but maybe he's in control of what we want, like...
Of a lot. I don't know that all about that. Like, if anything, then it teaches me that you can get away with doing evil, so I might as well do evil.
Yeah, that could be. It doesn't mean that God... That could still be true, but it doesn't mean true. Like, it doesn't mean...
It seems, basically, what the man's son is saying, it seems that who controls in this world what happens to him?
He's saying that man controls.
Man does, meaning the thief. You know why he's a thief? Because he controls, and he does fine as a thief. Mm-hmm. So if I observe the world, I have no reason to think that it's God. That's all he's saying.
Yeah, I get it.
I can still say maybe it's God and maybe it's man. He says, okay, but you definitely can't say that it's definitely God. You see that? That's why he's arguing. That's his rebuttal. Maybe there is a God, but I don't see it. Because I see a lot of man, and I see a lot of evil, where I would think that a God should get involved, but he doesn't. Not only that, what was the Avalokim's whole premise? Very nice. Why should you assert or submit to the control of God? Thank you. He says, oh, really? I see a lot of tzaddikim that, I don't know, Mr. Elokim, you guys don't seem to be doing so well. So here it comes. He says, Pasuk Yudalid, Yesh Hevel, another meaningless phenomenon that I find, Asher Nasala Aretz, Asher Yesh Tzadikim, Asher Magia Lehem Kemaseh HaRishayim, meaning there are a lot of tzadikim that I wish they would get what the Rishayim get, meaning the Rishayim are doing well, but tzadikim are doing poorly, meaning he says, I see tzadik v'ralo, v'yesh Risham sh'magia lehem kemaseh HaTzadikim, and this Rish over here, he should be living in that poor shack like the tzadik is, right? Do you see that? He says, I see tzadik v'ralo and Rasha v'tovlo, and that seems to undermine whose philosophy? The Yirei Elokim, because what has the Yirei Elokim been asserting? That because God is in control, tzadik v'tovlo. He says, no, I'm sorry, God is a hevel. Right, it's not working that way.
But didn't he say, like, everyone comes at a point, and, like, you don't know when that point is?
But he's saying even to death. Remember, Risha'im kfurim vava'u.
But also, like, how can you say, like, you don't know someone's life is good unless, like, you're in their shoes, like,
Alright, but come on. Very nice. But he's saying, look, based on what the Yirei Elokim is saying, a tzaddik should have like an okay life, recognizing the control of God. Do you see a lot of tzaddikim who are impoverished, who are suffering terribly? Or even a Rasha. It's true. Like an Eov, it's brought up that even though it looks like the Rasha's life is great, he's living in the mansion, he has two limousines, he's doing fine, and he's living in constant fear that maybe one day he'll be punished or he'll be sent to jail. Right, so you think it's so great, but maybe it's not so great. And then sometimes, I don't know, are there plenty of Rishon who are really doing okay?
I guess, like, I don't know, like, there could be, like, things that, like, you just can't see, but...
Could be. But that's exactly the point. You would think that if God wanted to show that it wasn't okay, I should be able to see it. So let me know that that Russia is having nightmares at night. Right? It'll make me as a tzaddik feel better.
But if it was so obvious, then there would be no choice. So like, there has to be like some like blurring.
Very nice. Right? Again, so I can argue that, or the Yirei Elokim may argue, you know, it's to allow for some level of freedom of choice. Meaning, we believe in Judaism. Why doesn't God strike people dead with a bolt of lightning? Very nice. But our comfort is, will there eventually be a time that the Russia is punished? Yes, what do we call that? Olam Haba. But if I don't have Olam Haba, then what's the comfort of eventual punishment? Right? I have comfort that, okay, I'll have, you know, maybe Hashem, you know, sees the greater realm of things and eventually things will be good for me, or maybe even my grandchildren, but that's already not my life. And I'll need that, but there's no, well, not, then the Rishon should also get punished here, but I don't necessarily see it.
The Hanan still believe that in some regard, God still has like a knowledge of what man's going to do, just like consciously man's deciding his own.
No, because remember the Nahantan who says man controls, even he believes that it's really predetermined. Not by a God who's responding to you, but like this force that predetermined it.
So then a person can live their life and do whatever they want because things ultimately are what they were supposed to be?
Correct. And does that mean that an innocent man will sit in prison and suffer his whole life? Yes. Does it have anything necessarily to do with his actions and choices in this world?
But so man's not actually controlling the consequences of their actions.
Correct. Is God, though? Is God responding to man?
No.
No. So how is man living? Thank you. So notice that, I'm glad that Lior is bringing this up, that even as the Nahantan is downplaying the philosophy of Yirei Elokim, is he offering, so far, is he offering any philosophy of his own?
No.
No, meaning we're going to notice that his philosophy is also quite depressing. But the truth is that is his rebuttal against the Yirei Elokim a strong rebuttal? Yes. I told you last week that you'd be from, but just for a little while. Here it goes. Hannah?
Could the Yirei Elokim answer all of that and never answer the question?
That's not a good answer. Why not? I can never give that answer. Ever, ever. Why not? Because I don't know about it. And if God wanted me to understand this world with the next world, then I should know about the next world. Do you know anything about the next world? No one knows anything. No, you don't.
No, I'm sorry.
Of Olam Haba. You know what Olam Haba is going to be? The Ramban disagrees entirely with the Rambam. Rav Yosef Ibn Kaspi disagrees entirely with Rav Yehuda Halevi.
I agree that thinking will get rewarded and Hashem will get punished.
That sense, yes. Yes.
Could he say, like, okay, it may not be looking...
But he doesn't know that, meaning that's a... Do you see that in this world, though? Is that how I should live in this world? That this world must be because... don't worry, Mr. Nantan, because eventually it'll all work out. When? After you're no longer in this world. How will the Nantan respond to that? He'll laugh till he falls over on his face. Why? Because I'm not asking about what the point of the next world is. I'm asking about this world. In this world, don't tell me that things are going to be okay in next world. I want to know that it pays off in this world. I'm going to give you just a slight example. And if I tell you, who was it? It was Al Gore, right? Who created a movie about what the world's going to look like and about the environment. What's it called again? Fireball? I'm making that up. He made like a documentary about the gradual deterioration of the ozone layer. By the way, Emily, I'm just so hard with you, meaning not just with you, because he can't bring in Olam Haba. He keeps mocking it. Everyone keeps mocking it, meaning that can't be an answer for this world. So, and we'll talk about Rav Elisha ben Avua, right? And he didn't accept that as an answer. But, right, why am I mentioning Al Gore? Because based on, right, not just science fiction, right, based on Al Gore's documentary, what's going to happen within the next 1,000 years? The entire ozone layer is going to decompose and the greenhouse effect is going to be exacerbated so that world temperatures are going to reach such highs that agriculture is going to be destroyed and ultimately man will not be able to survive. Who said that? Right, like doomsday. But now he's saying that when will doomsday happen? 1,000 years. All right, how does it end? You can control. How can you control? I haven't seen it, but like this is the spirit of it. By doing what? Recycling, not using any those deodorants, aerosol sprays, thank you. Electric cars, Mitsuyan. Yes. I'm looking around, like at people's reactions. Sorry?
He has like three hoppers or something.
Yes.
After he came out with the documentary, it came out that he had drives like two separate Hummers.
Oh, really? Like that he himself doesn't drive an electric car? I didn't know that. I just assumed that, of course, he does. Achon, now, what's your response to this? So I'm telling you, if you do not recycle, then, you ready? Emily, if you don't recycle, then, in 1,000 years, then the chemicals are going to cause, or are going to catalyze the deterioration of the ozone layer. Are you going to recycle that? Was that your water bottle? Do you recycle?
Yeah.
Yes, everything? Do you take your food and put it in a special compost container?
No. We do that.
Do you take all your paper, your shamos, you recycle? In school, right? You recycle? There's a recycling bin in everyone's room?
No.
Oh? And why not? Mind if I, firstly, I just want to know, in Alon Shvut, I really believe ecologically that we have a mitzvah of preserving the world. And so, Emir Hashem, when you come to my house for Shabbos, you'll see, firstly, in Alon Shvut, everyone now has three separate bins. But we were always like very good recyclers in our home. But, and there is a compost container now, not just me. Anyone have relatives or friends in Alon Shvut? That's the brown. It's the whole Gush Etzion. And then the green is for anything that can't be recycled. And the orange is for papers and plastics and basically any container. By the way, it's such an amazing feeling. Do you know which is my largest garbage? The green are things that you can't. And compost is only organic, like all foods go into the compost. The bottle, meaning it just gets filled. Basically, most of my garbage, I realized to begin with, was always boxes, aluminums, tin foils, papers, right, newspapers, what else do you put in the garbage on a regular basis? Empty bottles, empty canisters, again, isn't that pickle jars, whatever it may be. Isn't that amazing? And now it's such a great feeling that there's like no more Baal Tashchis. What's happening to everything? It's only going to be recycled. Okay, but back to you and your mentality. Again, everyone here, do all of you? No, I'm serious. Do all of you recycle everything?
No.
Why not? But Al Gore just told you that in 1,000 years, the world's going to come to an end.
In 1,000 years.
Oh, thank you. That's in 1,000 years. So you ready? Is what's going to happen in 1,000 years really affecting you now? Did you get the point? If I tell you, everything's going to be okay in Olam Haba, does that answer your questions for now?
No.
No? That tell you about what to do now? No. And so that's why Kohelet is looking for meaning where? Here, there must be meaning here without Olam Haba, because I don't know about Olam Haba. I don't see Olam Haba. And if God really wanted me to live my life in this world based on Olam Haba, what would he have done? He would have shown me Olam Haba. He would have said, Shani, this is what it's all about. Right? A retirement home in Florida. Right? But he didn't. Again, which tells me that there must be meaning to this world where?
Here.
I just have to figure it out. So far, none of our characters are doing so well. Okay, so let's look back at the Nehentan. And what does he say? Again, the end of Pasuk Yudalid was, Amarti Shagam Zehevel. It bothers me. But I'm sorry, Mr. Yirei Elukim. I see Tzadik Viralo Rosh Vitovlo. So it doesn't seem that God is in control. Pasuk Tedvav. If that's the case, now back to what Leora was saying. So what type of life should I live? Vishibachti ani et hasimcha. If that's the case, if God isn't really in control, and everything that man does is in fact just what has been predetermined for him, then I'm back to where I started from, namely, what should man do in this world?
Sit back, relax,
and
enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show. Ein tov la'adam tachat hashemesh ki im la'chol v'lishtot v'lismoach. What should you just do? Now notice, by the way, is he saying that that's meaningful?
No.
Okay, now before him, he said, I'm telling you, this is what God wants from you. But then we saw that Amal said, oh, really, how about the oppressed ones? He says, okay, so really, some people may be oppressed, some may not. Just eat, drink, and enjoy whatever it is that you can in this world. Doing whatever it is that you're doing. Again, according, you ready for this? According to the Nehentan, what should you do in this world? Live it out. Doing what? Doing whatever you want. Trying to enjoy it as much as possible. Live out. Yimei chayav asher natan lelukim tachat hashemesh. But now what he does is he just downplayed the Yirei Elukim. But who did he downplay it?
Uh-huh.
So in the first half of Kohelet, we saw one philosopher, and then another philosopher, and then another philosopher. But here we're going to see the Yirei Elokim is going to, first he speaks against, the Nehemtam first speaks against the Yirei Elokim. Now he's going to speak against the Chacham, and then he's going to speak against himself. Basically, he's saying
nothing works.
Excellent, no meaning, including even Hana'a. So that's how I know that this is his final speech. Goodbye, Mr. Yirei Elokim, and in his mind. Now, look at Pasuk Tzedzayin. Kasher natati et libi ladat chachma. He says, but I also thought about the Chacham's treatise, which is, what does death teach you? That you should try to control as much as you can in this world through what? Excellent. Vilarot titanyan asher nasa ala aretz. And try to figure out as much as you can about what goes on in this world. But he says, what do I see about the Chacham? That can't be what life is about. Why not? Kigam bayom uvalayla sheina be'enav einenu ro'eh. Because both during the day and at night, he never sees sleep. And remember we said, what is sleep? Sleep is just a barometer of satisfaction, of fulfillment. If the Chacham believes that the whole point of this world is to control, then what's he going to try to aspire to? To learn everything that he possibly can, to control everything that he possibly can. What's the problem? He can't. So he's never going to go to sleep. He's never going to feel settled. He's never going to really have any meaning in this world. V'ra'iti et kol ma'aseh Elokim. And do you remember, even the Chacham believes that there are certain things that God does that shows that God is in control. Do you remember this? Right? Like death, like traffic lights. Do you remember all this? And the Chacham says, how do you deal with everything that God is in control of, that I can't really control? Take a deep breath and recognize that, like death, there are going to be a couple of things in this world that are beyond my control. Says the Nehemtan, it's not a couple of things in this world that are beyond your control. Guess what?
Definitely.
You're going to realize that
a lot more.
That a lot more is beyond your control. So you're going to devote your life to doing what? To trying to find a cure for cancer. But guess what? Very nice. Remember, I mentioned the movie Outbreak to you? Mm-hmm. Right? About the... No?
Okay, yeah.
The disease,
herself.
And she gets sick herself. Mm-hmm. Right? Meaning, even the scientists who are going to try to figure out the cures, guess what? They who think that they're most in control, what's going to happen to them? And or... Aye, who is that Australian actor who knew like wildlife so well? Like that's what
Crocodile.
His life was. What was his name?
Crocodile Dundee.
Crocodile Dundee. That's right. What? Stephen Irwin.
Stephen.
Thank you. What happened to him? It was like, oh my gosh! Like it was Kohelet brought to life. Sorry, it was very sad, but he was swimming on an eel, right? A stingray. Thank you. Is it swimming on a stingray? Which, by the way, does he know stingrays like the fingers on his hands?
Yeah.
He studied this. He swims, or he catches, and these stingrays. But what happened? Very nice. It stung him. Not very nice. Sorry. Meaning it stung him in the heart. And why? Because he didn't know as much as he thought. He thought he can control it, but can man really control a stingray? No, that stingray was in a very bad mood that day. And so notice this, that this is the idea that he's going to bring out, right? He says, but there's so many things in this world that man is going to try through his knowledge to control, but he'll never, and he'll search, and he'll search, and he'll research, and he'll try to figure out the cure for this, and the solution for that, and the study for this, but he'll never find it. Even if the Chacham says, I can. I know all the theories out there. And can he?
No.
No. And I was just reading, so someone sent me an email of the top 10 inventions of the past year. You know, this is the season that you get. And it's fascinating, right? That now they realize they can combine three species of monkeys and form like a new species of monkey. This is like Kilayim de Orisa, right? But Anna, I was thinking to myself, why are they doing this? To see ultimately, like for man, whether or not we can mimic embryos and crossbreed and possibly like create different forms of life on our own.
But they're not really creating a new breed because once they're combined, they cut off the offspring.
Once they're combined. Right, then the offspring is fine, but the person, the scientist who did it is over on Kilayim de Orisa.
No, but isn't it when you... Is it the reason that donkeys?
Right, you can't take two separate. Right, that usually they
but
can't
then they
reproduce
usually can't
on their
reproduce,
own.
So they're not
right, so they don't know
species.
Yet if these can. I don't know if they can reproduce. You're right. I don't think they can reproduce. It's a new species.
So it's not a real new species. It's a new species.
That looks interesting. Do you know what I'm talking about? Anyone that's seen now? I think I erased it. Sorry, guys. Otherwise, I would forward it to the SFW list. But, again, or they photographed for the first time that a microscope was discovered that can photograph the double helix of the DNA. What are you supposed to say? Wow. But that's exactly it. Why? Okay, so, by the way, that really is cool. Why is it cool? Now that I can see it, what can I do? Manipulate it, see what happens if, you know, now that I know what I'm doing in the helix, I can break the helix, I can put the helix back together, see the effect. You see this? And but in the back of my mind, what did I keep thinking? And so they're going to say, we're going to find the cure for all of these, I don't know, genetic diseases. But will that ever really happen? No. So what? That's the Nehentan's claim against the Eurekim. You're not going to be able to find this. No, sorry. Lo yuchal limso. So now the conclusion of the Nehentan. You're all ready? Here we go. Say goodbye to him. He was a fun character, no? Character pasuk aleph. Ki et kol ze natati alibi. V'lavur et kol ze asher hatzadikim. His observations against the Yirei Elokim. V'hachachamim. His observations against the Chachamim. He says, I've really thought about this. Everything that the tzaddikim and the chachamim and the avadehim, biyada elokim. Says it's true. I think that it's all in the hands of God. What type of God, though? Not a God who responds to our actions. Gam ahava gam sinah ein yodeya ha'adam. Even something like love and hate, he's already told you. Does he think that man really controls?
No.
Hakol lifnehim ein yodeya ha'adam. Hakol lifnehim. Man can't figure it out. And this is something that's interesting. Right? Do we really know? Isn't this something very cool? That can you really figure out why or how a person loves? Meaning, you take five women and five men. I'm just going to end. Eventually, like the five women and five men fall in love with each other. Right? Now, that's like a gross exaggeration because it'll never happen that way. You take like 5,000 men and 5,000 women. Will some of them fall in love with each other? Mm-hmm. Ask why. But meaning, what is love? Meaning, did I decide? Do you meet the guy? Meaning, the whole concept of love at first sight. There may not be love at first sight. There may be what at first sight? Attraction, infatuation. Excellent. Is there really love at first sight? Do you really love a person just by looking at them? No. What makes you love them? Yes, but does it really make sense? Meaning, when you first met, can man control love? Basically, remember I told you the Twister movie? And you may tell yourself, the boy next door, I hate him. He pulled my pigtails when I was younger. What may happen? Fast forward 20 years after your five kids together. Again, notice this, in 20 years you already have five kids.
But if you pulled your hair when you were younger, how old were you?
No, but now I'm 18. Talking to you.
Oh, five kids again, 18 years
old. Within 20 years, fast forward 20 years, you see yourself married to that guy who pulled your pigtails with five. Got it? Okay. Here we go. So he says... Right. So basically he says man doesn't control anything. Now, the Chacham believe that man controls everything, and he says, no, that's so not true. The Yirei Elokim believe that what can man do? Man, if he
influence.
Recognizes that God is in control, what will he do?
Influence.
He'll affect that, right? He'll listen to God. He says, no, but it's so beyond anyone's control. Hakol kasher lakol. He says, for everyone, this is universal. Mikre achad latzadik v'larasha. What is he claiming? Everything is so what? So predetermined / so random. Right, the same event happens to the tzaddik and the rasha, whether you're a Yirei Elokim or not. Latov, to the good guy and to the wicked one. V'latahor v'latameh, to the pure and to the defiled. V'lazoveach, v'lasher enenu zoveach. Whose words is he using? And whether you sacrifice or you don't sacrifice, who said hang out and sacrifice? Remember the Yirei Elokim? That was his first statement. Katov kachote, the good guy. Same things are going to happen to him as the sinner. So the death. Really teach you anything about life? Mm. Yes. It teaches you that you can't control anything. It teaches you that just like death cancels life, that tells you that life in and of itself is meaningless. Again, I don't know how your interviews are going, but are there people who believe this? Because I'm going to die. Life is meaningless anyway, so Like, who cares what happens and what I do and what I study and what I eat and who I marry? Right? Are there people like this? The same thing will happen whether I swear or whether I'm afraid of swearing. Again, who was Mr. Afraid of Swearing?
Yeah. But for people who do live like this, I don't understand what compels them to do anything.
Not much. It's true. Basically, they just say, okay, let me just like get through life. And let me get through life. Now, don't worry. He's going to qualify it a drop. Is that okay? Here we go. Pasuk Gimel. Zera b'chol asher nasa tachat hashemesh. What is his view about life now? It's bad. There's no point. Ki mikre achad lakol. What proves to me that there's no point? Because we all experience the same happenstance, namely? Excellent. V'gam lev ha'adam, lev b'nei ha'adam, malei ra v'holi lopol v'avam. And Lior, you're 100% right. And therefore, what's man going to do all day? How's he going to live? I'm going to use your words. He's just going to pursue whatever whims he has. And generally, are they going to be good whims? No, just think, I'll do whatever I want. B'chayim v'charav ha'mitim, because he's going to die anyway. Ki mi asher yechubara kol ha'chayim. So basically, based on his philosophy now, there's no point to life. If that's the case, what should one argue? No point to life. And I'm not really doing anything. In response, I'm going to die anyway, so I may as well, what could I argue? I may as well kill myself. Thank you. And the response, I forgot like what show it was, where there was a suicide club. Right? I keep on thinking that the Nahantan would be like the captain of the suicide club, saying, there's no point to this anyway, so we may as well just end it already. So now he's going to say, it's going to sound a little comical, everyone, so brace yourselves. This is what he says. He says, really, there's no point to life. Nonetheless, he says, "Kimi asher yechubar el kol hachayim," but there still is a little advantage if you're still connected to life. Meaning, why should you stay alive? Kimi asher yechubar el kol hachayim yesh bitachon. What's bitachon? You have a little security. What's the security that I have in life? That's why even a living dog is better than a dead lion, right? In Tanakh, what's the greatest of the creatures?
Lion.
What's the lowliest?
Dog.
No offense to you dog owners, but again, the kelev is seen as a very despicable type of animal in Tanakh. So a kelev chai, there still is, even if I'm living a despicable, meaningless existence, it's still better to be alive. Why? There's a certain sense of security. What security do I have? Pasukei. Ki ha'chayim yodim sheyamutu, v'ha'meitim einam yodim mu'uma. What is the security that a live person has?
That at least I know
that I'm going to die. Whereas when I'm dead, I don't know anything. How do you like that? You're supposed to say that is such a depressing reason to stay alive. And according to him, why should you stay alive? Because there's an advantage to life. At least in life, I know something. What do I know? I have the security of knowing one day I'm going to die. Whereas in death, there's nothing. Okay. Ve'ein od lahem sachar. And also when you're dead, you don't have a reward. But he doesn't believe in a reward and punishment. What does he mean? Ki nishkach zichram. Because in death, we've already proven that you don't have a long-term memory. But at least in life, he says, there are people who know you. Who knows you in life? Your family members know you. The postman knows you. The librarian knows you. I keep thinking, like, soon there aren't going to be librarians and postmen. They're only going to be, like, Google goggles. So, that's another, like, new invention. You all know Google goggles?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Google goggles.
No, they didn't make them yet, but they're made. There are Google goggles, but they're not on the market yet. Isn't that something? I keep thinking, no one's going to be able to drive anymore.
What are they?
Like, imagine a Google screen, like all the apps, like you're wearing.
It's so dizzying.
So, like, I look at you, and all of a sudden, what pops up under Hadassah?
Everything
you're
about
on Facebook. Right? Or you go into.
You just look at something
else outside and say, I want to go to Malcha. What will it do?
Here you go.
Give you a map on your. On your glasses. I think so too. But you'll go into, like on the commercial, it shows the guy like going into the bookstore. And I says, okay, I'm looking for a book on ukulele. He says, okay, turn right, turn left, turn right. Okay, third one from, which one do you think I would like? Oh yes, this is the one. So why am I mentioning this?
Yeah,
I mean, it's very dizzying. That's why I don't think it's going to... I hope not. Right, that. In any case, but by the way, based on this, no one's going to have to know me. Why?
Because you'll know everything.
Very nice. They'll send you there. So, like, I'm not... And by the way, also, why did I say there aren't going to be librarians?
Because you don't need them.
There aren't going to be libraries. There aren't going to be postmen because...
Don't be mail
anymore. Aren't gonna be. Isn't this sad? Like, think about it. Technology is doing what to personal relationships? Destroying them. I'm not gonna really need to talk to my children anymore because. It's true, but I'll just email. I'll text message them all day. No, or no. I'm just gonna have to like. I can say it, and it will go automatically to their voicemail, Nahon, or whatever the case may be. Okay, in any case, but he's living pre-Google goggles, so he says, at least in life, are there people who will remember me in life? He doesn't even call it a Yitzharon. He says, in life, people remember me, meaning, after I leave this base medrash, what will happen? For like the next 5 minutes, you're going to remember me, right? But... this is so sad. But when I die,
no
one's going to remember me anymore. So you may as well be alive so that some people will know you, like even for the time being. What are you supposed to say? Like, are these good enough reasons to stay alive? They're like, okay, if life is so meaningless, so really you should commit suicide, but you may as well just get through life anyway. And that's what he's saying. Kineshkach zachran. Gam avatam, gam sinatam, gam kinatam, kvar avada. He says, and once you're dead, everything is gone anyway. All your loves, your hates, your jealousies. And then you have no connection to this world whatsoever. And therefore, you may as well do what? God knows what you're going to do anyway, so it doesn't pay to do anything. So if you're already going to be going through life, what should you do?
Have a good time.
Stay tuned for next time where he basically even dismisses what it means to have a good time. You can never really have a good time. Why can I never really have a good time? Because you know you're going to die. Have a great week.
I think I know what you're going to do.